This is the Education Gadfly Show.
Yeah, that's why I've given it, because you went ballistic on the study, Mike.
Oh my gosh, Amber.
You went ballistic.
What does Gadfly say?
Hello, this is your host, Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute here at the Education Gadfly Show and online at edexcellence.net. And now, please join me in welcoming our special guest for this week, Andrew Ujifusa. Andrew, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Mike.
Did I butcher that or get it?
Okay. No, you got it.
All right. Okay. Yeah, baby. Andrew, if people don't know, but you should know, he is a reporter for Education Week. He covers federal and congressional K-12 policy and politics and is the co-author of the Politics K-12 blog, and usually is the author of the Politics K-12 Twitter account, as we can see from your sense of humor.
No comment.
Also joining us, a man who has no Twitter account, David Griffith.
Happy New Year, Mike.
Is that true? You still don't have a Twitter account, or do you lurk on Twitter following us and watching?
If I lurk, I'm really bad at it, so.
My goodness. Well, yes, Happy New Year to both of you. Our first podcast
That's
2019.
Exciting.
I love it. This is, I don't know, how many years? We're into like 12, 13, something like that. A long time. We were doing podcasts way before they were cool, Andrew. Way before.
Wow.
It was like literally Al Gore had done a podcast, and I was like, hey guys, maybe we should do a podcast.
And that's why they weren't cool.
And that was, exactly. It was me and Al Gore. And yeah, and that does explain it. Thanks, David. Okay, I'm now out from under the bus you just threw me under. We are excited to talk about federal education policy, even though, Andrew, come on, nobody else cares about federal education policy. I don't know what you do all day. There's nothing happening and nothing going to happen in 2019, right? Tell us why we are wrong. We'll do that all in our Ed Reform update. All right, Andrew, I was half joking, but not totally joking, that it does feel like there's not much happening on the federal beat, even though you guys still have clickbait if you mention Betsy DeVos's name. But tell me where I'm wrong. What is happening in Washington? What do you think is going to matter in 2019?
Well, I'll pass on the clickbait remark, but so I think there's a certain irony here in that I think to a certain extent you're correct, is that I don't think anyone is expecting a lot of action on Capitol Hill in terms of bills being passed and Trump signing them and all that. But I think there will be a lot of attention on Capitol Hill for the simple reason that folks, especially early on this year, are going to be watching House oversight hearings. Because as I'm sure all your listeners know, the Democrats now control the House, and that means Bobby Scott of Virginia now controls the House Education Committee as the chairman. He's going to be very interested in calling up Betsy DeVos and her deputies to talk and question her about civil rights, the Every Student Succeeds Act, and grill her basically on why she's, for example, repealed a lot of Obama-era guidance. So especially early on, as I said, that's going to draw quite a few eyeballs on Capitol Hill.
So we will be tracking all of that, of course, as will the listeners of this show, I'm sure. But hey, Andrew, wait, you've been doing this a while. I mean, do you have any sense that these kinds of hearings have any impact out there in the real world, or that they lead to changes? I mean, do we, you know, and David, you weigh in too. I mean, do we have any reason to think that Betsy DeVos might change her positions on some of these things because of these hearings, or she just has to grin and bear it? I mean, what should we be watching for?
Well, I think it partially depends on how you define the real world. As to the narrow point of Betsy DeVos, no, I don't think it's smart to expect that based on a particularly tough hearing on Capitol Hill that she'll suddenly see the light, so to speak, and you know, accede to the Democrats' demands. I do think it matters, you know, with the Democrats' political base. Betsy DeVos is not a popular figure, to put it mildly, among a lot of the people that Bobby Scott wants to address and have pay attention. So I think when it comes to getting people, you know, to pay attention and get more interested in the political angle of what DeVos and the Education Department have been doing, I think it does matter to Scott and Democrats in Congress that they get the message out there beyond the Beltway. So to that extent, I think it could have a political impact.
David, what's your take on that? And another question is, would the Trump folks be smart to, whenever they can, send somebody other than Betsy DeVos to do these hearings? You know, send the assistant secretaries, the deputy secretaries?
Yeah, I think the answer to that second question is probably yes. I wouldn't claim any particular political expertise. That's why I work at a think tank, Mike. But I mean, in my experience, right, it's mostly kabuki theater and or just sort of extracting your pound of flesh, regardless of which side of the aisle you're on. You know, if you get enough outrage and pressure through these things, sometimes you can force, I think, people to walk back whatever they're doing. But I'm not sure, frankly, that hearings are the best way to do that. Right. It's usually something spontaneous. I think something goes viral and then there's outrage. But, hearings don't really do that anymore, right? I mean, the news gets out beforehand.
Well, and you also are, will give the administration a chance to make their case. I mean, for example, on discipline, we haven't really heard them say much. I mean, they put out the change in policy. They had some papers written. This all came out right before the holidays when not a lot of people were paying attention. Andrew was able to, get a hold of me on my cell phone while I was already away.
That's
right. For example, yes. But, this could be a chance for the administration to spell out. Here's why. Let's talk about what we thought was wrong with the Obama era guidance on school discipline. Here's what we're trying to do. We remain committed to civil rights enforcement, but we disagreed strongly with the old policy for X, Y, and Z reasons. I mean, that could be, now, if anybody's paying attention, that could be helpful to them, and it could also be helpful for their own base.
And I'm glad you brought up school discipline, because I think it's important for listeners to remember that Bobby Scott, before his time in Congress, he was a civil rights attorney.
Yeah.
And in addition to that, a school discipline, if it's not his top issue, discipline and racial disparities resulting from different discipline policies, if it's not his top issue, it's in his top three. So that might be the first hearing he calls when it comes to K-12. Yeah. He might do higher ed first when he calls an oversight hearing. And to David's point, Democrats on Capitol Hill have indicated to me that they don't just want DeVos for the, for the circus. They do want, assistant secretaries and things like that. Now, we'll see if they hold to that. Yeah. Some of them might be very tempted to just get DeVos up there quite a bit. We'll see. There's pressure from leadership to get DeVos in front of the cameras and things like that. So, but discipline, I think, is a good bet in terms of what comes up first in an oversight hearing.
Let's talk about one other thing, which is appropriations. Even if there's not other bills that get passed, they usually eventually pass appropriations bills. Crazy that this past year, they actually got the education bill done on time, which is why the Department of Education is not part of this partial government shutdown that we're living through. This must have been the first time in decades. I don't know, over 10 years, maybe. Did you get data on that when the last time they passed an education appropriations bill on time?
I don't want to say the exact year. Someone did tell me a while back, several months ago, when it did pass on time. But I believe it's been well over a decade, if not much longer.
I think that's right. So here's the question, I guess, is with the House taking, Democrats taking over the House, do we expect any big appropriations debates around K-12 education? Or is it likely to be kind of more of the same, which is that they've allowed spending to float upwards some, but not in dramatic ways?
Yeah, I think there will be more debate on the House side, because you'll have, in addition to Bobby Scott, you'll have Rosa DeLauro in charge of the House Subcommittee on Appropriations that deals with K-12. So I think she'll try and push the Democrats' priorities out there in terms of funding. The administration, I expect, will, when the time comes, propose more school choice measures for the upcoming fiscal year.
And those will be ignored.
They will probably be ignored by both parties. So I don't think it's unreasonable to expect a continued sort of slow growth in education spending like we've seen under the Trump administration, which maybe some people didn't expect.
It would be interesting to see if the Democrats will try to attach some things to the appropriations bill on policy. So, for example, try to say something about school discipline, that they have to revert back to the old policy on school discipline.
That's a good point.
Yeah. Where did they learn that from, Mike?
It's been going on a long, long time, David. Let me tell you. Yeah. This is not a new trick.
It's an old game.
It's an old game. But you still do have a Republican Senate. So you would imagine that something like that would get out. But again, it's so... so much of this, it feels like, well, they're going to there's going to be posturing, there's going to be symbolism. I mean, the president's budget is largely, just sending signals about what they care about, and then it will be largely ignored. And then likewise, that some of these things that get passed.
I mean, should we be wishing, Mike, that education stays in the news or out of the news? I mean, honestly, though, right? Is it going well if any issue gets in the news?
I think you make a good point. And I think it's likely to be out of the news for the most part. K-12 education, at least the Washington News. Again, I'm sorry, Andrew, I know that's your beat, but it's just hard to compete with all the other craziness in this town. And look, there is stuff happening out there in the quote real world. You've got a teacher strike about to happen in Los Angeles, for example, that has real impacts on hundreds of thousands of families and teachers. So, I think that it's tough to say a Kabuki theater hearing is going to be able to compete with something like that.
I do think there's a point to be made, and props to my colleagues at EdWeek who cover other issues. If you think about the biggest education stories of 2018,
yeah.
we're thinking about teacher protests and strikes. We're thinking yeah. about what happened in Parkland and all of the yeah. subsequent debates and arguments that grew out of that tragedy. Mm-hmm. So those are not Washington stories. Mm-hmm. Some of it might have grown out of things that happened in 2017 and the increased attention on education and Betsy DeVos, but those are not
yep.
Washington stories. Those are out there way beyond the belt.
Yep. All right. Last question for both of you. I'm already on the record saying that Secretary DeVos has earned a respectful return to private life.
Yes, you have.
And I actually thought that it might be imminent, but here we are, January, and she's still here. Will she be here by July 4th?
Yes.
David says yes.
Shouldn't she have left by now if she wasn't going to be?
Okay.
I'm not going to say yes or no. I know I'm dodging, but
you're a reporter. I do
think that's a fair point that she could have announced on November 9th or 10th that yep. I'm out of here with the house changing hands. I do think there's the possibility that she's turning more to higher ed because yep. she could do more in that space potentially. I'm not an expert on those policy debates, yeah. but there's potentially more for her to do there than K-12. Yep.
And we understand she was in some kind of road bike accident, right? Cycling accident.
She was. She's, according to her press secretary, she's recovering, but still mm-hmm. checking in with the office since it is, as you noted, still open and funded. So yeah. she seems to be okay.
Well, we'll send our best wishes for a speedy recovery. And that is all the time we've got for Ed Reform Update. Andrew, hope you'll come back sometime.
Thank you, Mike. Appreciate it.
All right. That is all the time we've got. And now it's time for everyone's favorite, Amber's Research Minute. Amber, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Mike.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Did you watch the big national championship game, the college football?
Oh, no, my husband did. I did not.
Did you hear what amazing have much. Clemson crushed it?
I did hear that. I saw the headline. Alabama. I did hear that. Yes.
So
Crimson
Tide,
that was a huge upset, obviously. Yes. Crimson, yes.
I mean, look, no hate for Alabama. It's just, you know, they've been so dominant
forever.
It's like,
yes.
you know, if the Patriots got crushed in the Super
right.
Bowl, which,
it's
you know,
a big deal.
Yeah, I mean, it just feels good. So go shout out to Clemson.
All right.
And the coach there, this guy, Dabo, seems amazing. He just seems like incredible leader, you know, totally about ethics and but also fun and
all
doing it the right way. So, hey.
And the kids got to keep up the grades to play. You mean that kind of thing?
Yeah, they got to keep up the grades. They know, you know, yeah, absolutely.
All football right. and ethics, good. Smash made in heaven.
I'm telling you, David, you should be open to it. Okay, Amber, what you got for us?
We're going to recap the top research minutes of 2018.
Fun.
Ooh, isn't that going to be fun? I know it's going to be a list. And we're going to start with number 5 and the effects. This doesn't sound like it's a really, it's getting off to a bang, but these are good. This is a good list, okay? The effects. Of low-cost efforts to mitigate chronic absenteeism. You know how I was really into all the nudge studies this past year, and there's a whole wave of these things that are really cool. Uh-huh. So we talked about, like, you know, most states have this fifth indicator around, you know, student absenteeism and their ESSA accountability systems. Yep. And this seemed to me like a study that could actually inform real State Department and policy, that kind of thing. So we examined the results of a randomized experiment in Philadelphia where parents were provided with information about their child's absences or not. Y'all remember in this?
Yeah.
And so some parents got to know, okay, just like this generic thing, like you should make sure your kids are in school. And then other ones got like the number of absences the kids had. And the other ones got like the modal number of absences in the classroom. Basically, they found that providing parents with their kids' total absences meant that students were 10% less likely to be absent. And providing info on their classmates' absences meant they were 11% less likely. The percentages were much lower when they just got the generic reminder. Okay. Yeah, and the analysts say that parents may not realize how many days their kids are actually missing school across the entire school year, right?
By the way, do these parents not have the Find My Phone app on their phone where they're not tracking their kids every movement?
Everybody might not do that.
Well, I'm doing it. Let me tell you. And my kids have a phone, which they don't yet, but I'm still.
All right. That was number 5. That just fell into the like real world research that might actually help real people.
Nice. Yep.
Number 4, how NCTQ ratings affected teacher ed programs. All right. Remember this one? This was from Dan Goldhaber in April. Corey Codell. I love this study because remember the big brouhaha that came out about these teacher prep ratings,
yes,
right? In 2013, they hated it. There was this mass revolt against them, right? So this was, I mean, people remember, but anyway, they looked at over 1,000 programs, in-depth studies of the syllabi and these various reading programs, big contentious report. So Calder comes along behind and does a sort of an experiment, right? And they actually try to see whether edge schools were responsive to these publicly released ratings. And so they gave them a little nudge. Nudge again. And they said, you know what? You could actually increase your score if you did X, Y, and Z. And so, for instance, you know, in some cases, they might say, if you increase your GPA to 3.0, your rating would go up. And then they randomly assigned the programs to these different things. Some of them got the nudge, some of them didn't. The key finding, the treated programs actually had slightly lower ratings from 2013 to 2016 than those of the control group. Analysts are scratching their head going, what the heck?
Yeah.
And what they posit is that there was so much existing hostility, who knows, toward the ratings that they actually fell on deaf ears. Yeah. You know, maybe it was like, you know, middle
Amber,
finger to you. I don't know.
Number four, Amber.
Number four.
It's, you know, but we all know how you feel about Dan Goldhaber his work.
I have a research crush. Dan knows this. Mm-hmm. The good news is that the descriptive part of the analysis found that about a quarter of the programs actually improved overall. So even though the study couldn't say the ratings caused it, there was some improvement.
We love it when think tanks have impact.
We love it. Number three, come on, people. Number three.
David.
Perverse impact? Okay.
How same-race teachers affect students' long-term educational outcomes. This is Seth Gerson's just doing, like, and Constance Lindsay. There's a handful of these guys. Mm-hmm. They've been really digging into the importance of teacher-student race match. Yeah. And they did another important study this year where they actually built on their prior work. This time, they're looking at the impact of having a Black teacher in elementary school on Black students' high school graduation and college enrollment rates. They go back. I did this one not too long ago. I think it was November. They go back and leverage the rigorous random assignment carried out in the Tennessee STAR class size experiment from 1986. Mm-hmm. They're essentially comparing the impacts on Black students who did and did not have a same race teacher within the same school in their first STAR year. They find that Black students randomly assigned to a Black teacher sometime in grades K through 3 are 7% more likely to graduate from high school and 13% more likely to enroll in college compared to their peers in the same school who are not assigned a Black teacher. Once again, beat on the drum, like, okay, how do we recruit more teachers of color?
Yeah.
And also, one of the neat suggestions they have is like, okay, maybe it doesn't have to be that. Maybe just exposure to a mentor of the same race, we could see a similar bump, okay? Mm-hmm. Number two, I'm cruising right along. Mm-hmm. The relationship across the globe between testing policy and student achievement. Remember this one snuck in? Oh. We're like, wait, this is Ludger Wussman.
Why did this not get
And Eric Hanishek, they examine how tests implemented worldwide and for what purposes. They look at implementation. They perform their analysis at the individual student level, building a database of over 2 million students in 59 countries, observed over six waves of PISA through 2000, 2015. They had this neat little, I won't get into methodology. But it was a cool study. The key finding is that testing systems that use standardized tests to compare outcomes across schools and students produced increased student outcomes. For example, if you change from not using a standard test for external comparison to actually using a test to compare, it's linked to an increase in math achievement of more than one quarter of a standard deviation. Systems that compare student outcomes also produce greater results than systems relying on formative tests that cannot be readily compared across schools and classrooms. And finally, tests for the purpose of internal teacher monitoring, like use of inspectorates was one of those in that category, insignificant results. So bottom line, using tests for comparative purposes is good. Number one.
As measured by tests.
As measured by tests. Yes. Drum roll. Am I the only one doing drum roll here?
Maybe Andrew can put in a little. That's going to sound crazy. And our ears are hurting now. All right.
Number one.
Some sound effects here.
Number one is the RM that I didn't even cover. David covered this RM.
Ooh.
And Mike wrote a five-part series on the study.
Oh, right.
What was it? Come on, people. You wrote a five-part series on this study.
You're not
going
to give it the number one study of the year, are you?
Yeah, that's why I'm giving it, because you went ballistic on this study, Mike.
Oh, my gosh, Amber.
You went ballistic.
One means good. What is this?
No, one means most attention.
Oh, this
one
is like
most
attention. This is like the man or woman of the year.
It doesn't mean highly rigorous.
Yeah, it can be Blake Shelton, right? Yeah.
It means how much attention. The relationship between test score. Yes, Colin Hill.
Yes.
Five-part series. For our reader or listeners who did not get, I don't know, was it five or six part series you wrote?
Five. A few follow up.
Right. And then David did the RM, I think. Reviews of research literature on short-term test score impacts and long-term student outcomes for school choice programs. They reviewed all the rigorous studies. Basically, they came back and said, okay, we're going to look at school choice programs that have impact estimates for both student achievement and attainment, high school graduation, mm-hmm. college enrollment, college graduation. They conclude that, quote, a school choice program's impact on test scores is a weak predictor of mm-hmm. its impacts on longer-term outcomes. You took them to task for that.
And I wasn't the only one. Woo. At different times.
We've yes, had
similar concerns expressed by people like David Steiner, like Dan
there
Goldhaber.
Yes. And you said basically that, you know, different choices would result in dramatically different findings. So there were some decisions that they made that other people could come in and make different decisions and they would have looked a little bit different.
Yes. No, it's an important question that they're getting at. I just didn't think that they did it quite right. They both in how they define school choice programs and in what it took for them to find that a study showed, the same direction for both short-term test score impacts and long-term outcomes.
That's right.
So as I dug into it, I think there's plenty of reasons to still be encouraged that in most cases for bona fide school choice programs, when you see student achievement go up in the short term, you see positive outcomes long-term as well. So there.
Well said, Mike.
Thank you.
All right, honorable mention, okay? Because I always have to have an honorable
mention. Oh, you're cheating,
Amber. I always cheat.
All right.
I looked at many, many, many. Maybe it's just me, because there are particular studies that I just like because they have real impact on the ground, like mm-hmm. it sounds to me. So this was a Josh Goodman study, came out in September. He looked at whether encouraging more students to retake the SAT mm-hmm. multiple times would narrow the college enrollment gap. Remember mm-hmm. me covering this study?
That was cool.
And lo and behold, it did, right? So just encourage the kids to take the SAT more than one time.
Yep.
A lot of them don't know they can take it more than one time. They don't know that their highest score is the one that's accepted. Right. Sometimes they don't know that.
You're right. This could have life-changing outcomes for some kids.
So when those studies come in where they're rigorously done and they also like impact mm-hmm. real people, real kids, or policies, like I love those studies.
Yes.
So anyway.
Good. It sounded like 2018 was a pretty good year in education research.
I think so.
Fair to say?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, this is good. Now, the question is, as we're getting more findings about things that work, how to get them actually used out there in the real world. We're going to fix that problem in 2019.
Easy. Easy, Mike.
Piece
we're all cake. Over it.
Piece of cake. All right. That is all the time we got for this week. So until next week.
I'm David Griffith.
And I'm Mike Cicirilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute, signing off.
The Education Gadfly Show is a production of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute, located in Washington, D.C. For more information, visit us online at edexcellence.net.